Greetings and welcome to Strange Times in New Boston. I'm Glenn Dickey, and I'll be your host and guide as we explore these strange times we have all found ourselves in. This is the second episode of the Strange Times in New Boston podcast, and it will cover the 2018 election in New Hampshire, Hillsborough District 5, and Flotterial District 40. If you have any comments about this podcast, please send them to me at strangetimesinnewboston, all one word, at hushmail.com. I'd like to begin this episode with a question. And the question is, how far would you go to win? Would you lie? Cheat? Steal? Kill? Go to war? Worse? There's a trend in modern political thought that seems headed for worse. If worse in the 21st century is anything like worse in the 20th century, we are all in for a very bumpy ride. So, how far will you go to win? I think how far you will go, what you will do, is partially dependent upon who you think your opponent is. If you think you are literally, in the old sense of the word, meaning actually, if you are literally fighting Stalin, or Satan, or even an abstract concept like terror, you might be willing to go farther than if your opponent was someone less menacing. If you believed you are involved in an existential struggle, that is, one upon which your very life depends, you are probably going to be willing to go all the way to win. You're going to grab whatever weapon is to hand and bash away with all your might as if your life depended on it, because it does, at least in your mind. We can turn this around, too. How far you are willing to go is also dependent upon who you think you are. If you see yourself as just another poor, misshapen piece of meat, barely conscious enough to perceive the enormity of its own ignorance, groping its way through a strange world that is largely incomprehensible to it, you are going to gain some flexibility, but lose some certainty. As a victor in a struggle, you might not feel the need to impose your own view of reality, such as it is, on your opponent. On the other hand, if you see yourself as a champion of justice, protecting the weak and downtrodden, defending the light of civilization against the barbarian hordes, and being on the right side of history, you are going to enjoy the certainty of the fanatic. You might not be able to change your mind, but you don't have to worry about not knowing what it is. You are not going to have any problems imposing the way it should be on any foe you defeat. Now, how far would you go to win? The election of 2018. The 2018 election never looked to be a good one for the Republican brand. It was an off-year, non-presidential election. The weather was bad, and of course, Donald Trump. Whatever your position is on President Donald J. Trump, there is no question that he has caused quite a stir. In politics, this can be bad news for the president's party. A political figure that stirs people up usually stirs up the opposition to some extent. The law of unintended consequences is quite real, as the 2018 election demonstrated. The political blowback from the unexpected election of our 45th president wasn't entirely unexpected. The Democrats were on fire, but the Republicans weren't. I think the party and the nation were still getting to know what a President Trump administration would look like. Presidential controversies weren't the only problem for the Republican candidates in 2018, though. Non-presidential midterm elections normally generate lower turnout. 2018 did not look to be a barn burner for Republicans prior to the election, and so it proved ultimately to be on Election Day. As a final blow, and perhaps to express some kind of supernatural displeasure with the election, it rained and the weather was generally bad. In the final analysis, Republican turnout was lackluster and voting patterns were erratic. Now, if the story stopped here, it would be completely uneventful and not worthy of further consideration. Just another election in Hillsborough District 5 and 40, but the story doesn't stop here. Despite all the indications that it was going to be a good election cycle for the Democrats, the local Democratic Party decided that it needed something more and decided to go negative at the last minute in the form of a mailer. Our local Democratic Party sent out a mailer smearing myself and Keith Ammon with a variety of half-truths and closely shaded language. all of which is actually relatively normal fare for Democratic campaign propaganda. This particular work of propaganda makes no citations of where any such assertions come from. It's just another political ad selling fear and demonizing the other, which is relatively normal in politics from the left these days. I was a little surprised that they didn't mention the widespread view among the left that Republican candidates in general and Republican Free State Project participants in particular must consume the flesh of Democratic children in order to continue their wretched zombie-like existence. They did leave that part out, which I thought was a nice touch. For anyone interested, there is an image of the mailer from the New Boston Democratic Party attacking myself and Keith Hammond in the files attached to this episode. There was one thing about the mailer that was kind of strange, though. One red herring detail that stuck in my mind. The mailer accused the Free State Project and, by association, myself and Keith Ammon with threatening secession. Now, I might be a damn Republican and a rotten Free Stater to boot, but secession? Where did that come from? I can't say that I've ever advocated for New Hampshire's secession from the United States. Having spent some of my childhood as the child of a military officer and being a military veteran myself, I have some idea of the scope of military force that the United States of America possesses. It would be a dramatic understatement to suggest that the military force so possessed is impressive. The idea that New Hampshire should or could form a country on the border of such a massive power is difficult to credit. It isn't going to happen, and if it did, it would probably devolve immediately. Just on a military basis alone, New Hampshire's secession is nonsense, in my opinion. It just isn't in the cards, and the circumstances where such a course of action would seem reasonable seem so unlikely as to not be worthy of serious consideration. Since I differ so much on matters of policy with the Democrats, I would have thought that they could have found better arguments to make. It is not like I am not on the record. Personally, I found the local Democrats' association of my name with secession troubling. Most Americans associate secession with the Confederacy and the Civil War, or fringe political movements, neither of which I am an advocate for, and the people that created that mailer knew or chose not to know that. The people that created this propaganda probably live in the same small town that I do, and some of them I have had social intercourse with while conducting town business. You would have thought that my constant motions to separate our town or state from the United States of America would have caused more comment. I would have thought that my advocacy, what would be presumably a violent and bloody revolution, would have been noticed by other board members. Maybe on the school board or on the finance committee. You don't really need much imagination to actually hear Wendy Lambert frown in reaction to a motion to violently overthrow the government. The people that made this propaganda must have known that I am not an advocate for secession and that their association of me with it was a fiction. Still, it didn't seem to fit then, but it would later. If I recall correct, it was before one of the early 2018 Finance Committee meetings that I first learned about the plans by the local left concerning my candidacy from Bill Gould. Bill Gould is a prominent local Democrat and was the chair of the Finance Committee and an active voice from the left in New Boston. We had both come early to a Finance Committee meeting, and he confided that there was a movement locally to create some kind of website regarding my candidacy. After regaling me with how awful and negative the site was going to be, he concluded by denying that the local Democratic Party had anything to do with it. At the time, I didn't know what to make of this declaration. If folks want to criticize the policies and agendas that I advocate for, then that is their right. In fact, bring it on. If you are the one running for office and I don't think you are doing a good job, I assure you, I will tell you so. We live on the inside of an adversarial political system, and it needs, nay, requires an opposition to function correctly. A one-party state is rarely a well-run state. Without competition, political elites get fat and happy and slowly strangle the people to support more and more elites. Anyone who thinks that a one-party rule is effective can look at North Korea or Communist China or California for that matter. It was only after the election that I got around to examining the website that Bill Gould told me about. I was unprepared for what I saw, but it did clear up one issue: why the word secession appeared on the local Democratic Party mailer. GlennDickey.com. If you haven't seen the website, glendickey.com, I would urge you to take a look. Unfortunately, the site has been removed unless you are going to go through an archiving site. Domains cost money, and the organization that created the site now has new people's lives to ruin. For anyone interested, I have attached the copy of the website and the files attached to this episode. The site is really an amazing piece of propaganda and character assassination. Apart from one particular assertion, which I will touch on in a moment, the website makes no substantial political arguments of any kind other than that I am a stupid idiot. The site doesn't advocate for any positions, it supports no alternative candidates, its only assertion is that Glenn Dickey is a stupid SOB. Beyond that, it has serious factual errors and constantly resorts to specious arguments. For the most part, the website is devoted to casting my personal history and character in the darkest terms possible. In all candor, after reviewing the website, I don't like the person that it describes, and I am that person. I have to hand it to those responsible for the site. The hate they feel for me and for what I represent in their minds really comes through in the writing. All in all, it's sad to see the left so debase themselves with this kind of anti-intellectual, hyper-negative campaigning and hate for their political opposition. You don't create a website like this because you recognize your political opposition as a genuine expression of the will of the people. You create a website like the one the left created about me, glendickey.com, because you hate your opposition, and you do not believe they represented a legitimate partner in forming governments of, by, and for the people. Whatever my personal failings may be, I do not believe my actions have in any way warranted the abuse that this website has heaped upon me. I am just not that bad, crazy, or narcissistic. HR 21. There is no way for me to defend myself against the many absurd claims, factual errors, and half-truths that this website contains. I don't have that kind of time. There is one particular claim that the website makes that garners my ire, and that I will discuss, and that is regarding HR 21. A resolution that I filed during the 2017-2018 State House session urging Congress to repeal or amend the Apportionment Act of 1911. GlennDickey.com claims that this resolution was intended as the first step towards secession. It might not be a popular truth, but the truth is that the number of citizens required to elect a member to the U.S. House of Representatives has been rising since the number of representatives was capped in 1911. There just isn't any way to argue that this isn't the case. The math is that clear. During the century after 1911, the population of the United States has added more than a few people. But as the number of members in the U.S. House is constant, it takes more and more citizens to elect a single member to the House. In 1920, the population of the United States was about 106 million. In 2010, the population was about 308 million. During this time, the ratio goes from approximately 243,000 citizens in 1920 to 709,000 citizens in 2010. Is anyone going to argue that the United States of America has become more homogeneous during the period between 1920 and 2010, those 90 years? Has our political leaders' wisdom grown such that the ratio of citizens to representatives required by a bunch of people who were from a similar cultural backgrounds thought was appropriate 200 years ago? Because we are more alike today with all our cultural diversity and global cultural reach, to argue that modern American citizens, possibly the richest, most individualistic, most empowered people this planet has ever produced, require a government less representative than the people did 100 years ago is insanity. It doesn't even make good bad sense. Over the last 100 years, the people have come to play a less important role in choosing those who govern their name at a federal level. Today, at a time when it feels like the country is being pulled apart, when more than ever we should consider diverse points of view in our national policy, at a time when we bestride the earth as the sole superpower, the left is really going to argue that excluding people from the people's house is the better course? Wow. Let's just go over that again to make sure we understand what is happening. A Republican, me, files a House resolution urging our federal government to become more democratic, and the left argues against it. What do you say to that? I can't believe I am the one to have to mention this problem. The Russians might not have a government that we would want to live under, but you can't argue that their citizens don't have a better representation ratio in their lower house of their federal government. The same is true for Spain, Germany, France, the United Kingdom, Italy, and Japan. Yes, that's right. Everybody we fought with and against in the Second World War. All our major enemies and allies have more representative governments today than we do. All the data is public and nonpartisan, and anyone who can use Wikipedia and perform long division can do all the calculations in a couple of hours. At this point, we have the worst representation rate of any nation with a comparable government in the Western world. That's sad. You hear a lot of talk about diversity and wanting to be inclusive coming out of the left, but where are they when it actually comes to giving the people more power? Why is it that Glenn the Bad has to be the one to push this? Wouldn't you think one of those shining defenders of the people that are constantly on TV these days would be able to work out the calculations on the back of a napkin like I did? No. The left is too busy creating websites to defame and slander the people who believe in real change. At the national level, nobody in the mainstream leadership of either political party will touch this. Not because it isn't right, but because they want to stay in power and not rock the boat. There's a line from the HBO series Game of Thrones, where Lord Varys is describing an ambitious member at court. Now, this ambitious member of the court, he says, he would see this country burn if he could be king of the ashes. I think that is the attitude of a lot of the mainstream politicians these days. They aren't interested in putting the people in charge of the country. They are being helped into powerful offices to administer a system that benefits certain special interests. Every day, with every new birth, the government is pushed further and further from the people it was intended to serve. Politics in the 21st century is a strange place in a strange time, but there's a punchline to the story of H.R. 21. After mischaracterizing what H.R. 21 was, the website Glenn Dickey went on to taunt me for not pursuing smaller government like a good Republican. Now wait a second. The site is going to criticize me when I act like a Liberty Republican and when I don't? What kind of chance does that give me? Is this a Monty Python skit? I am bad when I act like a Liberty Republican and when I don't? Seriously? You have to wonder at the mental gymnastics required by the author or authors in order to keep from admitting that they are simply bitter, hate-filled people who don't advocate for anything but hate me just the same. This is tribalism, pure and simple, folks. To understand the message of this site requires no thought. Glenn is bad, not because of anything he did or didn't do. He is bad because he isn't part of our tribe. The label is what is important here. This is essentially a non-intellectual understanding of politics and one that I reject completely. Tribalism is a simple answer to a complex problem that has only one defect. It's wrong. When we see the hyper-partisan nonsense that goes on in Washington these days and wonder how our federal government has broken down into two warring camps barely civil enough to avoid open hostilities, and then you think about the problem addressed by H.R. 21, and it all kind of makes sense. I'm not a genius, but the problem described in H.R. 21, that of a steadily climbing citizen to representation ratio, isn't going to go away. It's just going to get worse. There's no question that I have an ideological compass that points me toward solutions that favor the rights of the individual over the state, and that I generally seek to empower individuals and legislation. That's who I am, but that's not all I am. Before any other concern, before any thought of party or faction, I have a commitment to representative government. Representative government may not be a perfect form of government, but it's a damn sight better than what is ever is in second place. I find it deeply troubling that both the left and the right establishment are so threatened by this issue. If we can't trust that our leaders are going to maintain a commitment to representative government, then what exactly are they going to maintain a commitment to? Probably not a form that is good for the average Jacks and Jills of this country. The ugly truth of the matter is that the U.S. House of Representatives sold out the people of the United States in 1911 because, and I quote, it was getting hard to get things done, and has kept on selling us out ever since. We have hyper-partisan politics today and in this country because we have left the path of reason to pursue partisan dreams of the Republican and Democratic national parties. Website, who and why? To the best of my knowledge, the creation of largely fictitious and negative websites regarding political opposition is a new thing in Hillsborough District 5 and Flotarial District 40. Historically, this is just unprecedented, especially a website like this. I don't recall that there was anything quite this negative on the web when Bill O'Brien was Speaker, but I could be wrong. Still, running for state rep and being Speaker of the House are very different positions. If you were like me, and you had a website like this created about you, you might be interested in determining who created the site and why. At the bottom of the website page is a footer that links the site to citizenstrong.org. If you follow the link, Citizen Strong Action Fund declares that they are a 501c4 and almost nothing else. There's a way to give money, an index of all the websites they have created recently, but otherwise nothing substantial regarding them. Bloomberg.com has an article that references the group in conjunction with a man named John Burton. According to Bloomberg, Citizen Strong is run by Harvard graduate and former Obama operative named John Burton. He collects money, then farms it out to local volunteers who volunteer to dig up opposition research and then puts out cheap websites, presumably full of slander and errors like mine was. He is as Democratic Party as you can get without being an elected candidate. From my perspective, whether it was actually done by this part or that part of the Democratic Party machine is largely irrelevant. The who is clear. The site was created by local forces loyal to the Democratic Party for political reasons to advance their candidate. It also explains the weird coincidence of secession prominently appearing in both places. According to the IRS, a 501c4 is described as an organization must not be organized for profit and must be operated exclusively to promote social welfare. The earnings of a Section 501c4 organization may not inure to the benefit of any private shareholder or individual. I don't see how an explicit character assassination website, let alone a rogues gallery composed solely of Republican candidates, can be construed as solely promoting social welfare and not inuring benefit to any individual. But I'll leave it to the courts to make things stand on their heads in order to benefit the powerful and well-connected. It must be nice to be smart like John Burton and get to Harvard and then get a cushy job ripping off people's Facebook's account and making stuff up about them. I bet I would be really good at that. If there is a punchline to the who portion of our story, here it is. I bet every single Democratic candidate that ran Hillsborough 5 and 40 in 2018 is against dark money in politics. That's the beauty of machine politics, as personified so wonderfully by the Democratic Party. The left hand doesn't need to know what the right hand is doing. Maybe even the whole machine never needs to know. The candidates can keep their hands lily white and let the machine get dirty for them. I know the local Democratic Party has denied being involved twice in print, but so what? Did anyone expect them to come out and admit they did it? No way. Why would they? Whether the candidates, or the local party, or the state party, or just motivated citizens, whether they did it, or whether someone did it on their behalf, is irrelevant. The complex political culture of the ancient Romans has handed us down to us, an expression that we can use when confronted with some political questions today, even. The expression is qui bono, who profits. And by that analysis, there is a very select and limited group of people that profit from the creation of websites like the one about me. And that group is limited to David Woodbury, Donna Mombourquette, and Kat McGee. These candidates and or their supporters and or the political movements that they are part of created this website. It is to no one else's benefit. It is just that simple. This is politics. The players involved in this little drama aren't children. If the local Democratic Party really didn't want this to happen, they would have outed these people or otherwise distanced themselves from these acts way before now. Two, throwaway print denials and nothing from the candidates cost them nothing, and are worthless in my opinion. It's kind of fun to speculate, but in the end, we have to admit that there is simply a lack of facts and a lot of possible scenarios. And that brings us to what? What to do? What would you do if you were me? I feel wronged. I hope that is coming through. I will not go quietly. I moved 3,000 miles and changed my entire life purposefully to get away from the California style of ultra-left-wing politics, and it has found me even here. I thought to find a land that remembered the old ways, the Enlightenment ways, and while many still do here, still we cannot fence ourselves out from the so-called modern world. What should I do? At a time like this, I am reminded of the immortal words of Martha and the Vandellas. Nowhere to run to, baby. Nowhere to hide. Think about it. What would you do? And what do you think of my choice? That the site that was created about me has been taken down makes no difference to my mind. It's too late. I like to think that the local people that gathered the intel that aided in the creation of the site about me really feel like they got their time and money's worth. In the future, there does not need to be any doubt that there will be an active and aggressive criticism from a non-left direction in Hillsborough District 5 and Flotarial District 40. It won't be created by some distant, shadowy, dark money, radical left San Francisco organization 3,000 miles away. It's going to be do-it-yourself. It's going to be local. And I hope you all enjoy the ride. How far would you go to win? Would you impugn a man's character? Would you spread lies about someone? Would you damage a man's reputation unjustly? Would you just make stuff up? Because that is exactly what people in this town did to me, my neighbors. They did it on purpose. They did it for political gain. And that's how far some people that we all live with will go. And now, a special note for all you independents out there. This is a special message to any person of an independent political persuasion out there that might be listening. Independents need a choice. Independents are the people that stabilize our political system and keep the partisan actors honest. Independents, I believe in you, even if you don't always pick my team or me for that matter. I would hope you would see a site like the one created about me and would consider, who is going to risk this kind of notoriety just to run for office? We hear the left talk about voter suppression, but what about candidate suppression? In all candor, what regular person is going to risk having a site like the one created about me created about them, in addition to all the other costs of running for political office? If you don't think that campaigning in this manner has a chilling effect on candidates, I would urge you to think again. Most of us live in a world where we are not the masters of our fates entirely. Most of us live in a world where even the taint of scandal can affect our business, our careers, our personal lives, and perhaps even our children dramatically. I would like to think that most people are intelligent enough to see through such things, but not all. Independence, you, more than any other group in modern society, should demand a real choice at the ballot box. If we further reduce the number of candidates through fear, this in no way profits you. The worst thing in a representative Republican style of government like ours isn't to have the same party win consistently. It's to have only one party run a candidate. One choice is no choice. Even if you disagree with me fundamentally on issues of policy, I hope you will agree with me that we don't need to reduce our political campaigns to this level. Thank you. Well, that's the end of this journey. Thanks for letting me narrate our shared travels through these strange times. Next episode, I am going to reveal the forbidden secrets of the infamous and dreaded Free State Project. That is, if I live that long. If you have comments or questions about the show, send them to me at strangetimesinnewboston, all one word, at hushmail.com. If you would like to support the show financially, feel free to contribute at strangetimesinnewboston.podbean.com. Live free or... Wait. I think I promised in the last episode to run the numbers on me from my 2017-2018 session in the New Hampshire House using the same algorithm on my voting record as I used on those conformist apparatchiks currently representing New Boston in the New Hampshire House. I did promise that, didn't I? And we should keep our promises. That's certainly what we tell our children anyway. I did run myself through the same algorithm, and far from being the party hack the Democrats claimed, I received a low comrade score of only 72.5% in 2017 and 72.1% in 2018. Far less than the 95% obedience score demonstrated by the current gaggle of party comrades. I confess, I am a little embarrassed that I didn't break 75%. But the fact is that I voted less with my party leadership in the second year than in the first. I guess seeing how the political sausage is made did not endear me to those leading in the process. In my defense, I might suggest that if the Republican Party leadership is losing people dedicated to protecting the rights of the individual, maybe my low obedience score isn't the problem. Maybe leadership is. It will come as no surprise that I was no great fan of the political skills of Speaker Gene Chandler, who served during 2018. As always, spreadsheet files are attached to the episode, which I think makes us good. Live free or die.